This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yik. On today's show, another episode of The Heart of Medicine with consultant cardiologist Dr. Kannan Pasamanikam. And today we're discussing controversial and misunderstood therapies. Now, in medicine, healthcare professionals are always battling misinformation, especially when it comes to purported therapies and cures that, goes viral. They circulate on social media. They're shared among friends and neighbors. And what are the risks of buying into such controversial information, especially when some of them do contradict medical advice from your own doctor? So joining Dr. Kannan on the show today to discuss some of the common controversial and misunderstood therapies is consultant endocrinologist Dr. Hugh Fen Lee. So we will be talking about some of the concerns or misinformation that has been raised related to the treatment of heart disease and diabetes. Dr. Kannan and Dr. Hugh, thank you so much for joining me on the show. How are the both of you today?
We are both fine. Thank you for inviting us.
Yes, certainly. My pleasure to be here.
So if I can get each of you to first weigh in, perhaps starting with Dr. Kannan, why is this something you wanted to address? How much of a problem or of an issue has it been in the context of your interactions with your patients and related to their care and treatment as well, Dr. Kannan?
Okay, for a long time now, and increasingly so now, the public is being fed misinformation, or rather information that is at variance with scientific fact. Both the print as well as the digital media and YouTube is loaded daily with misinformation. To add insult to injury, procedures which have not been shown to be beneficial in properly done scientific studies are being promoted to the unsuspecting public, who at times spend thousands of ringgit for the bogus treatment. My colleagues and I are increasingly concerned that this misinformation fed to the lay public and these unsubstantiated procedures will be detrimental to the health and well-being. I do not have the figures to tell us how big a problem this is, but just seeing the messages that flood my own handphone tells me that this is rampant. There's a lot of money to be made from the unsuspecting public, and I think that this is the main driver.
And Dr. Hugh, why is this of concern to you in your practice?
Well, I think a lot of people are hesitant to professional advice, even when they don't go to see a doctor, partly because there was some suspicion that some of these are commercially driven with commercial interests in mind on behalf of the pharmaceutical industry. But on the other hand, those who actually they receive this information are from friends and relatives. Some of them are very close friends, perhaps. And the intention is very good that this advice has been given, except that some of these informations are pretty wrong and, in fact, detrimental to health a lot of the time. And I think to some extent, as health professionals, we too do bear some responsibility, perhaps, for not explaining to the patients adequate enough, clear enough, or addressing some of the fears that patients may have. And so therefore, they seek alternative advice, and some of these are actually contrary to the health benefits that we see for some of the conventional therapy, and therefore detrimental to the health at the end of the day.
Dr. Kannan, detrimental in what way? Because one might argue that perhaps some of the things that are being advocated for seem harmless, but what people don't see is the flip side. What are the serious and adverse consequences that you've come across?
That's a very wide question because it involves many substances that people use. Now, there are specific drugs that worry me. There are specific therapies, some which may be non-invasive, but still involve physical involvement of the patient's body by the practitioners. And sometimes some of these therapies are offered as alternative therapies because, you know, sometimes patients have got serious conditions like a blocked artery, for which the doctor might advise open heart surgery. That sounds like a huge surgery which frightens a lot of people. Or people might say that, okay, for this condition, you need angioplasty, which means that we have to put stents into the heart arteries. Again, invasive, again, very, very expensive. Then comes along someone says you don't need all that. All you need is an infusion of certain fluids over a period of time, and it will wash out all the blockages that you have in the heart artery. Certainly, if I was a layperson, that would be a very attractive alternative. The big question is, now, by going for these alternative therapies, which sound rather benign compared to what the professional has advised, will it benefit me? Or more importantly, will I miss out on treatment that might save my life? And the contrary is true, that by missing out on something important that the professional has advised, and for seeking out things that look rather safe and painless and maybe cheaper, you might end up dying. So depending upon what is the treatment that you have chosen, I mean, it might be a few harmless tablets, which would probably do you no harm at all. The only thing it will do is enrich your toilet bowl and lighten your wallet. So that okay, fine. I say that you got cheated, but nothing bad happened to you. But on the other hand, you could be missing out on very important treatment for a life-threatening condition that you have. And that, I think, is very dangerous.
I'm going to dive straight into statins. Get such a bad rap, despite having been around for a very long time as a mainstay of treatment for cholesterol or high cholesterol levels. Dr. Kannan, can you give us a bit of a 101 on statins? What can they do, and why are they so misunderstood?
Okay, I think for Fernley and me, this is a subject that is very close to our heart. Now, first, we'll start with a bit of history. Two individuals, Drs. Michael Brown and Joseph Goldstein, won the Nobel Prize in Physiology in 1985 for demonstrating studies regarding cholesterol metabolism in the body. Their research resulted in the discovery of structures called receptors, which are present on the surface of a body cell, that regulate the uptake of cholesterol particles. Subsequent studies showed that people who have reduced or in severe cases no such receptors will develop severe elevations in blood cholesterol and develop premature or early development of vascular atherosclerosis or blocked arteries, not only the heart, in your legs, in your brain. So the work of Brown and Goldstein paved the way for discovery of statins, and these are a group of drugs that inhibit the production of cholesterol mainly in liver cells by inhibiting an important enzyme. And the first statin was actually discovered in Asia by a Japanese scientist, Dr. Akira Endo. So this was discovered in the 70s. And then statins evolved. And the use of statins resulted in dramatic decreases in cholesterol levels in patients and a huge number of clinical and laboratory studies using the latest imaging technologies have conclusively demonstrated, one, the reduction in the size of cholesterol deposits in blood vessels, and two, the improvement, and probably more important, two, the improvement in survival and reduction in heart attacks and strokes in patients at risk given these drugs. Vascular disease, which includes the common term heart attacks, have multifactorial causes, meaning that several conditions either working individually or together cause disease. High cholesterol that we are talking about is just one of them. Now, other conditions, including diabetes, which is very close to Fernley, is a very, very important cause. Sometimes I tell my patients it's even more important than cholesterol. My patients with diabetes can tell me, doctor, what is my cholesterol level when the sugar is in the double digits? I say, my friend, your sugar is more important. Go and see my friend Fernley. The cholesterol is not so important. Okay, so that's very important to emphasize. Hypertension or high blood pressure is another important cause. Cigarette smoking. And the vapors out there who think that you have escaped by taking vaping, you are not excused. You will also die because of you have inhaled something that God didn't intend for you to put in your lungs. Okay. Now, obesity, family history is also very important. So you've got family members, especially family members who are young with real vascular disease, you need to have yourself evaluated. The more of this that you have, the higher the risk.
Let's go for a quick break and we'll continue the conversation on statins when we return. I'm speaking to Dr. Kannan Pasamanikam, consultant cardiologist, and Dr. Hugh Fernley, consultant endocrinologist. Stay tuned to Health and Living, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Shao-Ik. On today's episode of The Heart of Medicine, consultant cardiologist Dr. Kannan Pasamanikam and consultant endocrinologist Dr. Hugh Fenley, we're discussing controversial and misunderstood therapies which are rife, especially in the treatment of heart disease and diabetes. Before the break, we started discussing statins and why they're so central in the treatment of high cholesterol. Now, Dr. Hugh, how has the statins debate landed on your table? I mean, you treat primarily diabetes. So what do you hear from patients regarding their concerns about statins?
Well, I think before we answer that question, perhaps it is easier to understand about medications. All medication has side effect, and it is a statement that would apply to Western medicine as well as herbal medicine. Okay. Now, in Western medicine, when a drug is being approved for use, they have to state down the incidence. I mean, how many people who take this medicine actually have side effects and what sort of side effect there are and how serious these side effects are. Now, all these are documented and are actually being seen. In fact, most prescriber would have to look at the product information and know what sort of side effect they expect from patient and advise the patients accordingly. Now, statin, like any other drugs, do have side effects. The side effect rate is in the region of 3 to 5%. And some of these side effects are being held onto by certain individual and actually amplified. We do know that 99% of these side effects are reversible on stopping, which means if they do have muscle pain, if they do have liver function that is abnormal the moment they stop the medication, in terms of, I'm talking about statin here, then they recover, all right? 99% of them recover. So therefore, to a large extent, no medicine and statin is not an exception either. They do have side effects. And some of these side effects, unfortunately, as I said, people have gone to town about it and this is even more serious than the benefit of the drug, which is absolutely rubbish. I mean, if you look at it, the medication, we know statin cut down the heart attack rate by 50%, 50. Half the patients who are actually take that, the incidence rate of heart attack and ischemic heart disease is reduced by 50%. And you're talking about 5% maximum of side effect. Now, a person who actually suffered a heart attack may not live to see or say goodbye to the family ever again because 10% of them died, right? Well, if you have a side effect and you stop the medication, well, first of all, you don't die from the side effect. And secondly, if you take the medication, you do experience the side effect, you stop the medication, 99% of them actually disappeared. So therefore, the severity of the side effect versus the benefit, the implication of a heart attack and a muscle pain have to put into context in which these medications are prescribed for. Now, of course, if a person doesn't need a cholesterol medicine, a statin, then there is not much point exposing the person to the side effect, whereas there is very little benefit. If somebody whose cholesterol level is very good, by reducing the cholesterol any further doesn't give additional benefit without any history, family history of ischemic heart disease, then you're exposing the person to extra side effect without benefit. And that's something that I shouldn't do. No doctors would do. So that's the reason why we don't recommend statin to every single person that actually comes through the door. Most of the patients who need the medicine should be taking it. And if they do take the medicine, if there is side effect, we will actually look at either reducing the dose or stopping it and looking at alternative therapy. So side effect is something that we know about. We know how to deal with it, and we can actually reduce the side effect rate by looking at alternative treatment. But the aim is really, really is to prevent the first heart attack, or for those who have already had an attack, to prevent a second heart attack.
Because like you said, you're halving the risk of the next heart attack by taking statins. But Dr. Kannan, how are patients responding to the recommendation that they need to be on statins? Are they willing to try it out and then bothered by the side effects, they're stopping it on their own? Or are they in fact rejecting it out of hand simply because of the things that they've heard, the misinformation that they've heard?
I think there's a wide range of people and responses to our advice. There'll be one, fortunately, the majority of them, when we prescribe the drugs, are willing to take the medications. Like Ferli said, the incidence of side effects is about 5%. And the usual complaint is muscle pains. Now, there is an important condition where a person will read about statins because it is a common drug and they have been frightened by it because there's so much the media or the friends have talked about it, so that in their minds, when they walk into our clinic, they're already preparing themselves to be put on this drug, which can cause pain. So in a sense, psychologically, you're prepared. And so the moment you take the drug, they'll come and tell you, I feel the pains, doctor. And so we have to sit down and talk to them and try to objectively evaluate, is the pain due to the drug or is the pain something based on perception and psychology? And sometimes if you listen to the story and tell them, look, that is not the type of pain this drug is supposed to cause. And the next visit they come and say, yeah, I don't have any more pain now. So that's there. Whereas there are people who really do have the side effects, and then we pay attention, like what Fundy said, a few measures that we can take, cut down the dose, change the drug, and see how it benefits them. So some of them are willing to go through that. Now, very small proportion of patients are very adamant. They will come and they'll tell you, doctor, I've made up my mind. I'm not taking the medication. And I tell them that it's very simple. This is a two-way street. Medicine's a two-way street. My job as a professional is to provide you with the scientific data that's available to me. It is up to you whether you're going to accept what I say. If you choose not to, and so long as you understand the consequences, we will go along and see what happens. So that's the way it works. So I tell them that my consultation room, the hospital, is certainly not a prison where we'll make you open the mouth and we throw in a tablet and you have to swallow. So there's quite a bit of a variability.
But Dr. Hugh, what do you think can be done to counter, as you described, the going to town with the fears over statins?
Well, I think it's a big issue, about talking to patient, to explaining to patient. You know, in a busy practice, it is a shortcut that most doctors, including I, do sometimes when you just write a prescription and just tell patients to take it, without actually going through the side effect profile to look at symptomatology and the benefits, etc. I'm guilty at it, I have to say. So a lot of time you spend enough patient explaining, explaining to patient about the side effect profile, preempt them without actually scaring them and putting into perspective, actually, just state the fact. Then patients would understand and perhaps look at the issues or the side effect, and then perhaps to discuss things rather than running away from it if they do develop it. Now, the other issue is obviously that a lot of people have this myth about the fact that if it is Western medicine, they'll definitely have side effect. If it is herbal medicine, there's definitely no side effect. Now, this is obviously a myth because we have in the hospital practice, we have seen people coming in having taken some herbal medicine and dying from it, right? Because they actually have a reaction to these herbs and actually have a life-threatening issue. And in fact, they have an anaphylactic shock. So it is not without side effect. Now, the other issue is obviously that a lot of these Western medicine need to be registered. And in fact, most of the side effect is known. And some of the side effects, although less well-known, they are recorded and documented. So we do actually have the benefit of people reporting the side effect. And as we go along, get to know more of this and understanding a little bit more. And one of the issue that we look at is, of course, that we're talking about statin just now. It's only in the recent 5 to 10 years that we realize that it increases the risk of diabetes about 10 to 12%. Now, this is something that we didn't know when it just started. But to put it into perspective, if you look at it, the 10% increment is actually fairly small compared to the 50% reduction in heart attack rate that you see for those who actually need the medication. So as I said before, if a patient doesn't need it, then don't give it because there is side effect to be content with. So to a large extent, those things need to be discussed with patients. Coming back to the traditional therapy, so to say the herbal medicine, now, I know a lot of the traditional complementary medicine practitioners. They are the ones who actually say, hey, look, some of the product that they have are actually not to standard, and they don't know, and people don't know about it. They just think that as long as under herbal medicine, there's no side effect. And because of that myth, a lot of people would say, you know, since if I will take a herbal medicine, whether it works or not, it doesn't matter. At least it doesn't do any harm. But that is a myth that has to be dispelled, because a lot of people would say that since your Western medicine have got side effect, right? So therefore, I will go to something that has no side effect. But first of all, it doesn't work. And secondly, it's a myth that it doesn't have side effect, and they do. And in fact, some of the side effects are not well defined. You actually don't know what is in the herbs, you know, because they are not registered product, and some of these complementary medicine. And so therefore, nobody knows the content, and nobody can actually state down the side effect of some of these medications. So to a large extent, they are exposing themselves to a risk that's undefined. And they are exposing themselves to a risk that are unknown to a large extent.
Are there certain herbs or herbal formulations that you like to caution patients or our listeners about when it comes to either diabetes or heart disease?
Okay, I think put into perspective. In fact, I was just talking to a Chinese traditional medicine practitioner. And in fact, he was just showing me a few articles on treatment of chronic disease, and the paper that they actually wrote are very much the same kind of investigation they go through for some of the herbal preparation, which means they go through a double-blind controlled study and look at endpoints like you know, what the glucose level is, etc., etc. Now, those are very much the same investigation that Western medicine goes through. And I think that is credible because you've gone through those, you've defined the side effect profile, you look at the benefit of those medication. Now, the problem is that some of the herbal products that is sold in the market, because they are unregistered, nobody actually knows what the content is. And in fact, you question whether the batch that you buy this month and the batch that you bought last year, whether it's actually contained the same thing. So therefore, although as a branch of medicine or complementary medicine or certainly herbal medicine, some of them who actually go through quite a detailed study and defining the benefit and the risk ratio, those are the ones that are credible. But mixed with that, a lot of other herbal products that we actually don't know the content of which, and we don't know the benefit of which, although they claim they can treat 1,645 diseases, but do you believe that? And secondly, how do you know that this, even if they say what they claim is correct, how do you know whether this batch of product will treat that and the next batch of product will do the same thing?
I think two drugs in particular, or two formulations in particular, need to be addressed because patients always ask this. Now, one is red yeast, and the other one that I'm particularly angry about is coenzyme Q10. So I'm going to spend a little bit of time explaining this. Now, red yeast contains monocholine K, and basically this is a chemical that's identical to the active ingredient in a cholesterol-lowering drug, lovastatin. Lovastatin is one of the first-generation statins that's available. Now, a study carried out in China in 2008 involved 5,000 patients who had suffered a heart attack, and then they were treated with red yeast rice, and they were followed up for 4.5 years. And that's, to me, that's quite impressive. The number is impressive. There's a follow-up study done. And the study also showed that there was some benefit because there was a reduction in the incidence of subsequent heart attacks in patients who had taken red yeast. But this is the only study that has shown benefit. All other studies using red yeast have been very inconclusive. Now, a study done a few years ago showed that some capsules of red yeast contain a contaminant called citrinine, which can damage the kidneys. And this is related to what Fernley has just said. This has got to do with quality control because in the production of this drug, there are several manufacturers. Now, the European Society of Cardiology since 2011 and the American Heart Association most recently in 2021 actually advocate the use of citrinine-free certified red yeast rice to reduce mild elevations in cholesterol in low-risk individuals. And when we treat individuals with cholesterol, we classify them as low, moderate risk, and high risk. Now, the same authorities say that red yeast rice may be considered patients who need lipid-lowering therapy but are not able to tolerate statins because of side effects. But the next line is very, very important. The same authorities emphasize that red yeast rice cannot be used as replacement for statins in high-risk individuals. And who are high-risk individuals? High-risk individuals who are people who have established vascular disease, meaning that these are people who have already suffered a heart attack, who have been demonstrated as blocked arteries, who have gone for bypass surgery, who have stents implanted in them. In these patients, they need to take statins as prescribed by their physicians, and statins in these patients will be life-saving. And like Fernley has pointed out a moment ago, they should not stop the drugs. Now, the other drug that has to be talked about is coenzyme Q10. Now, coenzyme Q10, if you look at the biochemistry, is a naturally occurring compound produced in the human and animal body. It is a coenzyme, meaning that it aids enzymes that are very important in production of energy in the body. Very popular nutritional supplement valued at US $470 million in 2018 in the global market. Now, each day I see at least 1 to 2 patients in my clinic who are taking coenzyme Q10 because they have been told that it would strengthen the heart. So the big question is there any scientific proof for this? Who, if at all, needs or will benefit from consuming coenzyme Q10? In January of 2021, the very respected Journal of the American College of Cardiology did a review of the available literature led by Dr. Valentine Fuster, and he's a very respected American physician and researcher. And these are some of the points they made. That they said that muscular pains and aches are one of the most common side effects of statin therapy. The cause for this is unknown at this time. The mechanisms offered are mainly speculative. Statins have been shown to decrease or deplete coenzyme Q10 in the body. And because of this, it is speculated that maybe the decrease of coenzyme Q10 in the muscles by statins may have caused the pain. So all this is very speculative. So leading to this, multiple trials were conducted to investigate whether there's any benefit in using coenzyme Q10 as a supplement in patients with statin therapy. To date, the data has been very inconclusive, with some trials showing some benefit and others showing no benefit. In fact, some trials even showed that muscular pains increased with coenzyme Q10. So after reviewing the data, the recommendations of this research group was to give a trial of coenzyme Q10 if muscle pains can be conclusively shown to be due to statins. You can have body aches due to anything, vigorous exercise, too much work at the office, narrowed nerves due to degenerative processes. Okay, so if you can show for sure that, yes, statin is the cause of the pain, then you might want to give a trial of coenzyme Q10. And if the pain really does decrease, then the continued use of coenzyme Q10 at a dose of 200 to 400 milligrams a day will be acceptable. Some of my patients just take one capsule, which is 100 milligrams a day. And let me tell you, coenzyme Q10 is not cheap. 100 milligrams, about 3 ringgit a day. Okay. And some pharmacies have advised my patients on statins to consume coenzyme Q10 as a preventive measure. There is no scientific or clinical data to support this, and this should not be done. Now, coenzyme Q10 has also been evaluated for patients with heart failure. Again, the data is very variable, and all the authorities do not advocate routine use of coenzyme Q10 for heart failure. In our practice these days, there are several powerful drugs to help patients survive heart failure. And we occasionally use coenzyme Q10 in somebody with severe heart failure, having taken all the traditional drugs and it's still not better. And then we throw it in to see whether there's any benefit. And I can tell you to date, I have not been impressed. There is no role for the use of coenzyme Q10 in healthy individuals. It certainly should not be taken in the false belief that it will strengthen one's heart. It will certainly not do that. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration does not approve the use of coenzyme Q10 for the treatment of any medical condition. Now I can stop ranting.
But, you know, there are going to be patients who say, well, of course, doc, you want to prescribe me all these fancy medications like statins. You know, you're going to get a lot of money from the pharmaceutical companies for prescribing them. What's your argument to that?
I don't get a cent from the pharmaceutical company by prescribing the drugs. Okay, I don't get kickback. But you see, it is important to understand science. Because we know that if a certain treatment saves lives, there must be proof. Now, that goes with statin, that goes with treatment of diabetes, that goes with treatment of asthma, any diseases that actually works to do that. Now, for them to actually do prove it, they need to go through vigorous study, vigorous investigation, involving thousands of patients to document the benefit at the same time to document the side effect. Now, unfortunately, in this day and age, to launch a drug will cost millions of US dollars. You said that for a successful drug to launch nowadays, you'd be looking at 1 billion US dollars. And for individual a pharmaceutical company, which is there to make money, they would actually put in a lot of investment to it. At the end of it, they want their money back. So it's a business, all right? Now, for prescriber, for doctors, we are not there to help them to make money. We are there to use a drug, if it is good, to save lives, to relieve the disease and to make them better. Now, unfortunately, some of these drugs do cost money. But look, over the last 20, 30 years now, since statin has been available, the price of statin is actually very cheap. In fact, you look at the cost and benefit ratio in terms of life saved is actually very, very low, you know, compared to other drugs, of course, in the market, because it's now generic. Most of the drugs are now available as generic. So from the statin point of view, for example, the push for the pharmaceutical industry for them to be prescribed and make a lot of money actually gets less and less convincing because the drug is so cheap now. Mm. Having said that, I understand that people who say that doctors would actually benefit from it, I certainly haven't got a kickback from it. I certainly don't get much out of it by prescribing a drug. But I think if patients benefit from it, I get more satisfaction out of actually having to be able to help patients using a product that is effective in relieving or reducing the risk for the patient itself.
Time for another break on the show with me today, consultant cardiologist Dr. Kanan Pasamanikam and consultant endocrinologist Dr. Hufen Lee. We're discussing controversies and misinformation related to the treatment of diabetes and heart disease. Stay tuned to Health and Living, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living. I'm T. Shao-Ik, and I'm joined today by consultant cardiologist Dr. Kanan Pasamanikam and consultant endocrinologist Dr. Hufen Lee. We've been discussing statins, good or bad, coenzyme Q10, useful or not, and other similar questions and dilemmas when it comes to many of the mainstream medications, as well as alternative supplements that continue to be highly debated in the treatment of heart disease and diabetes. Now, Dr. Hugh, when it comes to diabetes, are there also medications that are similarly villainized the way statins are? And is there anything you'd like to clear up?
Now, for diabetes, one of the myths is that all the drugs actually cause multiple complications, and particularly kidney failure. Now, we know that diabetes is the main cause of kidney failure. In Malaysia or in the Western world, we know that 50% of the patients who end up with dialysis is actually due to diabetes, right? So it's responsible for more than half of the kidney failure to needing dialysis in Malaysia. And it's not due to the drugs. A lot of people think that the drugs do it. In fact, the drugs don't do it. None of the drugs cause kidney failure. One of the common misconceptions is that metformin, which is one of the most widely prescribed drugs for diabetes, actually cause kidney failure. In fact, it's far from the truth. We do know that metformin reduces blood glucose level and actually protect against complications of diabetes, including kidney failure. What the myth, I suspect, come about is that if a patient's kidney function is very poor, you're down to the last 20% or 30%, it is not advisable to continue on metformin because in the face of a poor kidney function, metformin is accumulated in the body to a very high level, and so therefore it's not desirable. Side effect rate actually increases, and that's the reason why for patients who've got kidney failure or very poor kidney function, we would not continue using the medication metformin. Now, to be fair, metformin is another drug that a lot of people say, hey, look, the drug company is pushing it. Metformin has around longer than I have been. It's more than 60 years old, the drug, and it's still being used. The reason why it's still being used 60 years down the line since it's appeared in the market is because there's no better replacement. It's still a very good drug. Does it have side effects? Of course, it does have side effects. I mean, now one of the major side effects is actually bloating, diarrhea, gastrointestinal side effect. Again, that is dose dependent. So therefore, you give them a big dose, the more likely they'll get it. If you reduce the dose, the less likely they'll get it. And if they take the medication correctly, which is to be taken after food rather than empty stomach, the side effect actually reduced by more than half. So therefore, by actually educating the patients, explaining the patient, taking the medication correctly and at the right context, the side effect can be reduced quite a lot. And with the benefit of the medication working to reduce the diabetes level and therefore complications.
Dr. Kannan, I want to move away from medications to procedures now. And one highly controversial one is something called EECP or Enhanced External Counter Pulsation. Can you address some of the perceptions or misconceptions around that?
Okay, now EECP is a non-invasive mechanical treatment that can help reduce the symptoms of angina. Angina is chest pain due to blocked arteries that an individual, a patient will have. Now, clinical studies have shown that EECP treatment can actually help decrease symptoms of angina. In those people whose symptoms are not controlled with traditional medical therapy and who are not suitable candidates for either bypass surgery or balloon angioplasty. Now, I must emphasize that this treatment should not be used for non-heart-related chest discomfort or pain. And some of the people outside who are making money out of it are promoting it to the lay public as something that will help your heart arteries. Nothing can be further than the truth. During EECP, what they do is they use long inflatable cuffs, which are wrapped around both legs. These cuffs are similar to the ones that a doctor uses to check your blood pressure in the clinic. And these cuffs are inflated or deflated in synchrony with the heartbeat. And what they do is use electrical signals that are naturally produced by the heart. The cuffs are inflated when the heart is in its relaxation phase. And this results in squeezing the muscles in the legs and thus literally driving more blood to the heart and specifically into the coronary arteries. And this is especially beneficial if the arteries are diseased and narrow. The cuffs are then deflated when the heart goes into its contraction phase. And this results in relaxing the heart muscles, increase the capacity to hold blood, and in a sense, it creates a vacuum-like state into which blood can passively flow, and therefore, it decreases the work of the heart. The EECP is approved by the Food and Drug Administration, and its use in selected patients is approved by all major cardiac organizations. So, it is a method of treatment that's bone fit, which will benefit the selected group of patients. There's some evidence that ECP may induce the formation of new blood vessels in the coronary artery system, that this is the arterial system that supplies blood to the heart. It might stimulate the release of important chemicals from the cells which line the insides of the coronary arteries. It may improve the function of arteries far away from the heart. So there are benefits that have been scientifically proven. So ECP therapy may be considered for anyone, as I've mentioned earlier, who still has chest pain due to blocked arteries despite maximal therapy and who is not a candidate for bypass surgery or angioplasty. It has to be emphasized that ECP is not first-line therapy and that it's certainly not a replacement for bypass surgery or angioplasty, which may be life-saving for some patients. ECP is currently being promoted by irresponsible people as an alternative to coronary artery bypass surgery. I cannot emphasize more strongly that this is completely wrong and that it may pose a danger to the patient's life. I've also been told by people who have consulted me who do not have any heart ailments that they have been told that they'll benefit from ECP to strengthen the heart. Nothing can be further than the truth. There is no role for ECP in normal individuals.
Again, right, the argument would be, but it's non-invasive. What's the harm anyway?
You have 12,000 ringgit. That's how much it costs for at least one sentence, charges that amount for one series of treatment, which is totally useless. I mean, you might as well go for evening walks. That will do more good than your ECP for someone who has got a normal heart and normal arteries. It's total rubbish to say that I will do it because it's non-invasive.
Dr. Kannan, how do patients respond when you talk to them? And I know you do take the time to explain all the benefits and risks, and especially when they are, you know, on the other side, getting all these very emotive messages, information that cherry picks data. How do they respond when you do take the time to explain it to them?
I think, like, as Fernley mentioned, I think one of the big problems with we doctors, and all of us are guilty of this, is busy clinics, large number of patients to see, and you don't have enough time to explain to the individual person. Now, I must say that when we are faced with someone whom we think needs bypass surgery, all of us will stop and spend more time with that patient. That is not somebody where I'm writing a prescription for Panadol to be taken over the next 3 days. We realize that this is a huge thing for them and the family. And most physicians will spend enough time, sometimes call them back after hours, sometimes call them back for two or three sessions to counsel and explain. And I must say that I've been doing this for more than 20 years now, and I find that it has not failed. Now, sometimes the patients will just frankly tell you, "Doctor, I'm scared of having my heart opened. I need more time." So I said, "Okay, we'll give you time." Sometimes we just did somebody, a lady who has had a heart problem for now 12 years, and we thought the time had come for bypass surgery for her. And after spending about 3-4 days, she thought about it with herself and her family and said, "I think I need a few more years. Is there something else we can do?" So we kind of went to second line, which was angioplasty, which we were not over the moon about, but we thought that at least it would buy her the required number of times. So sometimes we go along with what the patient says and choose therapy which we think is reasonably safe, which will not cause harm to them. So give them time to come to terms. So it's a two-way process, and if people feel that you are really out to look after them, they will come around. And even the most frightened patient will finally say, "Okay, I'm ready for this." I mean, you cannot tell them you need to have it done tomorrow. You don't have a choice. And that kind of thing, that kind of bullying will certainly not work. And we all have gone through this, having lived enough number of years to see family members who have had to go for procedures like bypass surgery. So we know what are the emotions that are involved, and we relate to it very closely.
It does seem that there is increasingly polarization, medical and scientific evidence against everything else that's out there. And it shouldn't be that way, should it? Perhaps just a final takeaway to encapsulate everything we've discussed today. Where do you stand on the information and the misinformation that people receive? You know, earlier, Dr. Hugh, you said some of these purported therapies claim to do this and that, treat thousands of things and have no side effects. So in your takeaway message, can you share with our listeners, what would you say to them now as they're listening to this and perhaps maybe still swayed by everything else that they're hearing as well?
Well, I think that's it's our job to actually understand patients' fear and the aspiration at the same time. I mean, obviously, if I were a patient, I would want a medicine that costs nothing, has no side effect, and do all the benefits there is. But I think realistically, you can't have a medication that do 1,645 things. So therefore, it's to understand, it's to explain to the patients what the medication can do and what they can't do, and what are the side effect profile, and where you're going to achieve, what you're going to achieve by taking this medicine. What other therapy they need, and what other thing you need to look at in terms of lifestyle changes to complement the medication there is. One other thing that I forgot to mention, because some of the so-called traditional therapy or the herbal medicine, the product of which are not well-defined and not controlled, and a lot of them are adulterated with steroid, and some of the problem we see in my clinical practice is because of the steroid that has been included in those medication that actually cause more health problem than the disease itself sometimes.
Dr. Kannan, a final note?
Okay, I think one of the things I want to mention before we end is going back to supplements. And this is certain supplements can be very dangerous, especially when used together with traditional medicine. And here I'm talking about blood thinners. These are things like ginkgo. I think balsam is something that's quite common. Korean ginseng. In fact, turmeric. Now, all this can cause decreased clotting of the blood. And if you are a patient who is taking blood clotting medicine for various reasons, you should not take these medications, should not take these supplements together with your medications, because one of the big risks is increased risk of bleeding to the brain. Well, when you use the word blood thinning, we're talking about anti-clotting medicine. Blood thinning is a very lay thing. You know, we can use it to affect platelets. They can be even stronger drugs like warfarin, which are even stronger clot blasting or preventing clot forming in the heart for various conditions. Now, if you're taking any of this, like warfarin is a common drug that people know about, clopidogrel or Plavix, another common drug that people will have heard about. If you are taking this, it'll be very dangerous for you to take any supplements that I've mentioned. Like I talked about turmeric, something, garlic pills, Korean ginseng, balsam. Long ago, we had a patient who required bypass surgery, and these patients are counseled very extensively not to take any supplements. After surgery, this man would not stop bleeding, and in fact, he died 48 hours after surgery. And then when we investigated, he found that in spite of the advice of the surgeon, he had been given supplements by his family, which is similar to balsam. And he had been quietly taking it, and this interfered with drugs that were used during bypass surgery, and just basically bled to death. So I think that's very important, that certain supplements can have very important side effects. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Dr. Kannan and Dr. Hugh. I've been speaking to Dr. Kannan Pasamanikam, consultant cardiologist, and Dr. Hugh Fenley, consultant endocrinologist, for this month's episode of Heart of Medicine. This has been Health and Living on BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.